Thank you. Thank you, Marcus. Thank you also to the other Mark for the kind invitation to pass by here. Okay, so today I would like to share with you some points, some opinions, say, about Suzy Health, as I qualified it here, concerning the flavor and dark matter issues in view of the LHC recent results. So first of all, just to summarize a little bit our situation concerning the searches, the direct searches for supersymmetric particles at the LHC. Well, we had recently, as you know very well, the EPS conference in Grenoble, where the results of say one inverse phantobarn at the LHC were were given concerning in particular the searches for Suzy particles. We had an impressive in fact progress in our coverage of the supersymmetric parameter space. Now this is the typical Suzy parameter space using the M0, M1 half parameters. For those of you who are not familiar, M0 represents, say, the common mass of the scalar partners of the ordinary fermions, and this parameter M1 half is related, say, to the masses of the fermionic partners of the vector bosons of the standard model. So, for instance, M1 half is related to the fermionic partners of the gluons, which are called the gluinos. Now, what is interesting is that now the region which is covered, you see, extends to the TV scale. Here we are at the TV. In terms of M1 half, we are at the order of 500 GV, but physical masses, for instance, gluino masses, are obtained from M1 half multiplying by a factor more than 2. So essentially for gluino and squark masses, so for colored Suzy particles, we are in the TV range. So as it was said by the person presenting this, in fact for gluinos and squarks, by now we are in the TV range, and certainly the observation that is saying that the air is getting thin for constrained Suzy, it means that at least in some minimal version of the supersymmetric extension of the standard model, things start becoming more and more constrained, given the fact that these particles are exceeding the TV scale, that was the scale that was supposed to be of interest for the presence of Suzy.
Yes,
yeah, sure.
What's the special reason to choose tangent beta 10?
Yes, no, this was just a choice. Now I think I have some other plot with a different tangent beta. This, you know, even if you go to the so-called constrained minimal supersymmetric standard model, so if you want the minimal supersymmetric standard model, you still have four parameters plus the sign of another parameter, which are free. So two parameters are this M0 and M1 half. Then you have another parameter, which is this parameter A, another parameter which is tangent beta, and then the sign of a parameter called the mu. So this is just a choice which was made, but let me see if I have another.
It was checked, and it's very insensitive.
Very insensitive.
Yeah, it is not. Maybe I have some other. Let's see if here. No, okay, here the choice is the same, but in any case, because the. This plot was for CMS, this is for Atlas. What can be of interest is to see here the progress which was made in 1 year, so going from the 35 inverse picobars to the inverse femtobarn. You see that the region here, it is in terms of physical masses, masses of the gluino and mass of the squark. Here it is again in terms of M0 and M1 half. So if you take at least simplified, let's say, situation where you take two squark generations and you take a zero mass neutralino, the conclusion is that for equal masses of squark and gluinos, you go above the TV scale. In fact, if you want, this applies to supersymmetry, but it is a more general result. This table, which is unreadable, and in fact I could not read myself, but there is an important message behind this table. This was presented, I don't remember, maybe by Atlas, yes, Atlas, but CMS is something similar. This is a large table, which shows the status of our effort, or if you want, the experimental effort, in looking for a different kind of new physics particles, which have been proposed by theorists along the years while waiting for experimental results. So here you have SUSY particles, particles related to extra dimensions, particles related to a fourth generation of fermions, and so on and so forth. So we are not going through this table, but there is an important message in this table. The important message comes from the scale here. I think you showed, no, this transparency, this slide at the EPS. The important message is that this is a scale in TV. And you see that for many of these particles which had been proposed in the last decades by the imagination of theorists, you see that the TV scale by now is becoming a reality. I mean that the bound is already pushing. Obviously, there are exceptions to this statement. You can always construct such an astute, say, model so that you can avoid such a stringent bound from the experimental searches. But the main message is this. Now, if you want for SUSY, I would agree with what the plenary session speaker commented about SUSY, namely that at least in the minimal version, either the MSSM, minimal supersymmetric standard model, or some variant of it which is not violently different, say, from the construction of the MSSM, we are already pushed for colored SUSY particles above the TV scale. Obviously, there are many possibilities to avoid such a stringent conclusion. You can go to spectra which are not as simple as in the case of the MSSM. You can go to other construction, but again, I repeat the message that you should take into account when considering now flavor and dark matter searches is that for minimal versions of supersymmetry, we are already passing the threshold of this TV scale, at least for part of the particles of the spectrum. Now, concerning the evidence for new physics beyond the standard model, well, as you know, we have essentially for observational reasons to go beyond the standard model, we have traditionally three roads at disposal. The most ancient and efficient road is the so-called high energy road, have enough energy at disposal, produce the new particles and observe them. Well, we have to admit that in the last decades we didn't have any solid evidence of the production of new particles or new interactions from such a kind of high energy road. The second road is a bit more sophisticated. It is not brutal force, but it is to invoke a kind of quantum mechanical trick, say, namely to see the presence of new particles not as real physical particles, but through their virtual effects in contributing to physical processes. This is a very interesting road. Maybe I should remind that for the young people here, but this was the road which allowed us to see, to touch, in quotes, for the first time, new particles like the charm quark or the top quark, even before we could have enough energy at disposal to produce them. So it has been a very efficient road to see the presence of new particles, even though you do not have enough energy to produce them as a physical particle. Well, at the moment, on this clearly I'm going to comment now, but my conclusion would be that we don't have any, again, clear evidence that there is the presence of new physics. It is curious that the youngest, if you want, of these three roads, although particle physics actually started from astroparticle, not from cosmic rays, but in any case, what we call nowadays astroparticle physics is a bit more recent than the other two roads, and the best evidence we have for new physics comes in fact from this astroparticle road, neutrino masses, the presence of dark matter, the existence which is witnessed also by our presence today of a cosmic matter-antimatter asymmetry. If you want, you could also say some evidence in flavor of an early inflationary epoch which cannot be produced by the standard model scalar potential, maybe the dark energy, if this is related to the standard model particle physics. This I'm not sure, but dark energy should be included in these reasons. Okay, now going to the theoretical reasons, clearly the standard model does not suffer from any fundamental deficiency like, I don't know, the Fermi theory of weak interactions. So we have some reasons that most of us consider strong reasons in favor of the presence of new physics. In a sense, they are aesthetical reasons. Here, aesthetical does not have a does not have a better qualification or a diminishing qualification. It is important. Aesthetics is important in physics and also in our life. So it is an important question. But aesthetical, I mean that they are problems, the gauge hierarchy problem, the fact that there should be a unification of all fundamental interactions, the fact that someday there should be a fundamental theory telling us why the muon is 200 times heavier than an electron. All of these are points of view of what physics should do in terms of explaining things. Obviously, another possibility is that they are just related to parameters which do not need an explanation from a theory of physics, say, a fundamental theory. Now, concerning this issue of the high precision, high intensity road in searching for new physics, well, at the EPS conference we had, in fact, they were things that we already knew before. A few things were new, but in any case, for instance, if you consider flavor physics, this is the like sign the muon charge asymmetry, BD case, which has been with us already for some time, and also there it was reaffirmed that indeed we have a discrepancy which is almost at the 4 sigma level. However, this was produced only by D0, as you know very well. The other experiment at Evatron CDF does not have the possibility to test this muon charge asymmetry with such a level of precision. For LHC, it is too early to have results. So this is certainly something of interest, which however has to be somewhat taken together with the fact that for the CP violation, the B sub S system, we didn't have any strong input from the result concerning the phase, the CP violating phase in the B sub S decay into J psi phi. Now, it is true that even if you neglect this issue of the CP violating the BS system, still we have a tension which is present. You see here in this plot you have one observable which is called the sinus 2 beta. This beta is one of the three angles of the Kabibo-Kobayashi-Maskawa matrix. And here you have the branching ratio of a charged B meson into a tau plus a neutrino. So these are the data concerning these two parameters. For sinus 2 beta, I'm going to tell you, but in particular you can get it directly from measuring the appropriate entry of the CKM matrix, which is the entry connecting the up quark with the bottom quark, the so-called VUB angle. Well, another possibility is instead of measuring these two quantities, since we have a redundant determination of the unitarity triangle, then you can derive these two quantities making a fit of this unitarity triangle. So you use other data, you plug them inside this unitarity triangle fit, and you derive as output these two quantities. You see that the obviously, if the standard model is correct, you should find the same result, measuring them directly or deriving them from the CKM. You see that we have a discrepancy, which maybe is at the level of more than 2 sigma. Now, this is a tension which has been with us for some time. If you want more quantitatively, this can be reproduced here. And you see here you have the value of sinus to beta. Well, as I told you, one possibility is to derive the sinus to beta from a fit of the unitarity triangle. For instance, you could say, well, I take the experimental result for the CP violation in the Keon system, the observable of the oscillation of KK bar and BB bar, the entry of the BCB of the unitarity matrix, another angle of the CKM matrix, and then the branching ratio beta 1 u. Or you can make different choices. Well, you see that making these different choices, the result is rather constant for this sinus to beta. It is a result which is close to 0.8. So this is not measuring it, but deriving it from a fit of the unitarity triangle. Then you can say, okay, I adopt another strategy to measure this sinus to beta. I go and I take a process like a B-quark going to charm, anti-charm, and S. Well, obviously, here there is no direct presence of sinus to beta, but if you measure the CP violation here, the CP violation has to go, in fact, through the presence of this angle beta, so you can measure a three-level process and measure the induced CP violation from the mixing, CP violation induced from the mixing BB bar. You see that you get a value which is rather small compared to the unitarity triangle fit. Another possibility is to measure again this angle from CP violation the B system, not through the mixing B anti-B, but through directly from the penguin contribution. So this is the mixing, I mean, not through the box mixing, but through the penguin contribution. So essentially you measure different BDKs, and you see that again all these values are more or less systematically smaller than the values of the UTFIT unitarity triangle fit. So this tension is there. However, you know, if you want, all this can be summarized in what people call the VUB crisis. VUB crisis because, as I showed you, if you want, this VUB, which is the entry of a CKM which has inside this sinus to beta, if you determine it through the semi-leptonic BDKs, according that you use an inclusive method or exclusive method, you get two different results. Maybe I have some quantitative. Yes, you see, this is inclusive, this is exclusive, and if you want, here it is compared directly with the branching ratio B into tau nu, which goes through the angle VUB. And you see that there is such a kind of tension. Moreover, the tension is even becoming enhanced because of a direct measurement now of the branching ratio being 2 tau nu, which gives you a result which in fact does not agree with either of the two determinations of UB, inclusive or exclusive. So the situation is certainly a situation of crisis concerning this. However, again, it seems to me that these tensions maybe reveal more the fact that we are somewhat ignorant about how to determine these parameters more than a real serious disease of a standard model.
Could it be that part of the crisis is connected with uncertainties in F sub B?
But not entirely. Not entirely. Yes, no, no, you
latest values you're taking.
You pointed out a correct thing, yes. There is obviously an uncertainty of FB. Personally, I don't think it can be ascribed entirely to that. There are other things, for instance, something that I find rather puzzling, is which was reaffirmed, was this large difference, you know, in the CP asymmetries that you find. You can measure the CP violation considering the neutral B decaying into K and pi, K plus pi minus, or a charged B decaying into K plus pi zero. Then you see that the only difference in these two decays is that you go from pi minus to pi zero. So you would say, well, it is just an isospin rotation from pi minus to pi zero, so I'll find a very similar CP asymmetry in these two decays. On the contrary, you see that you find a large difference. I know, but my view is that maybe, you know, it is our, you find this surprising if you compute this using factorization, you know, so considering that the B quark has these two different decay channels, then it is true that they are just related by isospin, and so the only difference should be an isospin violation, say, and so you do not expect such a large difference, but in my view it is the fact that maybe we are not able to handle sufficiently well the non-perturbative part of this decays. Last but not least, you know that in July we were rather excited by the CDF result concerning an enhancement for the decay of for the expected, say, decay of the branching ratio B sub S into mu plus mu minus. So this is a very interesting process. You see, the CDF result was this branching ratio B sub S into mu plus mu minus. You see, at 1.8 plus 1.1 minus 0.9 times 10 to minus 8, compared to the standard model prediction, which is at the level of 3 times 10 to minus 9. So, clearly, if we could have an evidence for this branching ratio at this level, this would signal the presence of some new physics contributions. Well, Unfortunately, both CMS and LHCb, LHCb I think now has something like 300 inverse picobands. So it has already a significant amount of data. Well, you see that here the result was only an upper bound at the level of 1.5 or 1.9 according to times 10 to minus 8. There is no direct conflict, you see, between these LHC results and this CDF result, as you can see from the numbers here. However, the fact that LHC does not find any enhancement, well, I would agree with the conclusions of the plenary speaker who said that the situation becomes inconclusive at this point. So, part of our excitement, July excitement for the CDF result went away. In conclusion, well, this is an exercise that we are trying to do this time, and namely we are trying to see, again going back to the parameter space of supersymmetry M0, M1 half, you see this white area here, so all the area below this curve, was the area previously covered by LEP plus LHC with 35 inverse picobands. This upper curve here denotes the area which is going to be covered by the end of this year, probably, with two inverse femtobands. They see we'll be able to cover a very large area. So at the moment, with one inverse picoband, we are somewhat in between. Now, if you add to this constraints coming from precision physics, in particular the decay beam to S gamma and the anomalous magnetic moment of the muon, already part of this region of parameter space goes away. And even more if you include the result coming from B sub S into mu plus mu minus. You see, with two inverse femtobands, it is expected that by the end of this year, we should be able to either exclude B sub S into mu plus mu minus at the level of 4 times 10 to minus 9. I remind you that the standard model predicts this decay to be at the level of 3 times 10 to minus 9. Or to have some evidence, a 3 sigma evidence maybe at the level of 5 times 10 to minus 9, or a 5 sigma discovery if this is rather large at the level of 10 to minus 8. This was what was given. Well, now the CDF result, I remind you, is in fact at this level of 2 plus minus 1 times 10 to minus 8. Well,
here, just in the previous slide, LHC two inverse femtobar has a different time scale because LHCb, because they
yes.
Get the fraction of the luminosity.
Yeah, yeah, in fact. But you see that now LHCb is, I think they have 330 inverse
for this result.
And you see that the result is somewhat.
Well, for CMS, it will keep continuing growing while
yes.
It has delivered, but no, it will be constant.
It will be constant, yes. Probably they'll. By the end of the year, I think they'll finish with this.
CMS might actually give a better result by then.
It could be, in fact, yes. You see, no, now our exercise was to see the implication if by the end of the year this bound 4 times 10 to minus 9 is achieved. And you see that out of this blue area of allowed points, well, already part of the area is excluded by being to S gamma G minus 2, but B sub S into mu plus mu minus could play a major role in excluding many of these points. What vice versa would occur in case LHC finds some evidence at the level of 5 times 10 to minus 9 or at the level of 9 times 10 to minus 9? Well, you see that you have these points which now would appear, so this would be very relevant because in a sense we would expect that not only there is this evidence for B sub S into mu plus mu minus, but there could be some evidence also from the direct searches. This is in another plot that it is more difficult to read, but which is relevant. This is M0, and this is tangent beta. So you see the area. For instance, if B sub S mu plus mu minus is found at the level of 9 times 10 to minus 9, the points which would be favored here stand with a very large tangent beta between 40 and 50.
Probably excluded already.
Which is not excluded, but in a rather difficult situation. In fact, this would be a very interesting result, because in a sense would squeeze a lot the possibilities that you have to play with the SUSY regions. Yes.
Clarify here that this 5 10 to the minus 9, that's above the standard model, or this is including the standard?
No, this would be above the standard model. The standard model is below this 5 times 2.
This result, this numbering is standard model plus new physics. That's what he means. But this is above the standard model value.
This is above the standard model. The standard model...
The standard model is 3.5 10 to the minus.
Yes.
Is this 5 only the extra contribution, or is this 1.5 extra?
Yeah, no, this is the total, it sums the two, but I mean it is above the standard model pure contribution, I mean. Now, another thing to watch carefully, I think, concerning precision tests is the G minus 2. In particular, let me stress this point that today we have a precision, this is experimentally on the measurement of the G minus 2, you see, which is at the level of 0.5 ppm, which is a really remarkable and impressive result. However, probably in a relatively near future, I think we can expect a significant improvement on this. You see, this is the plan for this is the Brookhaven, if you want, experiment on the G minus 2, which now will be carried even in a physical sense, taken from Brookhaven and carried to Fermilab. Today we had the approval of this, well, to be more careful, we had the stage one approval of this experiment, and you see this experiment plans to improve by a factor 3 the precision on G minus 2. Even better, we'll do probably J-Park, achieving a factor 5 of improvement in the precision. In fact, this starts casting some doubt about the possibility that we theorists can keep up with such a kind of increasing precision. At the moment, you see, this is the theoretical situation. I think what is interesting here to remark is that you see, using the E plus E minus method to compute the G minus 2, we have been constantly above the 3 sigma discrepancy in recent years. Okay, these are the most recent results of the 2010, including also the Babar results, and you see we are abundantly above the 3 sigma discrepancies. It is interesting that even adopting the alternative method of using tau data for the determination of a G minus 2, this was at the level of one standard deviation some time ago. Now you see that we are above the 2 standard deviations also here. In conclusion, the G minus 2 shows that there is a kind of difficulty for the standard model, which is keeping rather stable. And you know, the only problem with precision at this level, 0.1 ppm, is that I am afraid that we are reaching the point where we'll have to confront ourselves with a computation of the so-called light by light contribution to the G minus 2. Now it is not the moment to enter into detail, but let us say simply that this is a very difficult part to handle theoretically. So although at the moment the situation is that the theoretical error is at the same level as the experimental one, in the future it could be somewhat more difficult to keep this kind of equality in the 2 degrees of precision. The other asymmetry.
I mean, the light by light thing, the error is just completely made up in that, right? I mean,
yes.
Well, I mean, and I thought many years ago, people made the argument that the error could be much larger. And so, have there been any.
Not really major progress. In fact, no, this was my worry. I tried to
have the old results, you don't have the.
No, but you know, so far with this level of precision at the experimental level, we could say, okay, but the light by light contribution is somewhat small, so I can, in some sense, not be so worried about it. My point is that in the future, maybe we'll have to cope also with this contribution if we want to achieve the degree of precision that experimentally we'll get. So this is the last point that I wanted to mention is that still we have this interesting, puzzling, and also difficult to explain asymmetry in the production of in the asymmetry in the TT bar production. Difficult to explain because on the other hand the cross-section for TT bar works nicely with respect to what the standard model predicts, and also this TT bar asymmetry grows with the invariant mass of TT bar. So if one wants to construct models to explain this TT bar asymmetry, generally one has to make some some how could I say acrobatic exercise to accommodate all of these different things. There are proposals in the literature, but I think it is a kind of puzzle that has still to be understood and to have it under control, say also theoretically. But in conclusion, you see, my point here that there is here you say I put no for the high energy and for the high precision experiments is due to the fact that in spite of the fact that we have things like the G minus 2 for instance or this tension for sinus 2 beta and so on, I think it is difficult to claim that there is a real evidence. Sometimes I say that with a standard model it reminds me a bit of someone catching a cold. Generally colds remain for a few days and then they go away. Very rarely, fortunately, a cold develops into a pneumonia, and generally a cold disappears. Now, the standard model had very severe colds. In the past, those who are not so young here in the audience will remember that the standard model had some colds at more than 4 standard deviation. And when I say 4 standard deviation, I mean something. And at least one of these colds remained for I think more than 1 year, no, I guess, or something like this. We are used to that the standard model gets colds. However, we are also very...
For those of us who don't know, which cold are you referring to? Longest cold?
No, it was a cold at the time of the lab, about the so-called RB, in any case, say, of the Z into BVVAR, but yes. No, it gave some excitement and also a lot of work for us theorists to write a certain number of papers. But unfortunately, you know, then this cold disappeared. And we'll see. I hope that some of the colds that I told you about are going to remain. But at the moment, I would still qualify them as colds and not as serious diseases of the standard model. Now, the question that everyone is asking these days is obviously whether then if none of these colds develop into a full-fledged disease, whether it is possible that at the end we have only a light Higgs boson to be found at the LHC, maybe by the end of next year, and no other signal of any new physics. But personally, I think that this is a very hard situation to accept, because if you consider practically all extensions of a standard model at the TD scale to cope with the gauge hierarchy problem, practically all of them give visible signatures at the LHC. You have really to make an incredible effort to construct a model at VTV scale without any signature at all for BLHC. So I think this is something to take into account. On the other end, I must share with you some worry, which is the fact that it seems to me that at the same time all these extensions of the standard model at the TV scale, they were introduced to cope with a fine-tuning problem that we call gauge hierarchy. On the other hand, you know, it is a common denominator, it seems to me, at least most of these extensions of the standard model, that you have to do a fine-tuning on the parameters of these extensions themselves. If you want, roughly speaking, the reason is that you want this new physics to reproduce the mass of the W or the mass of the Z, which is 100 GV. So, if you ask which should be the typical mass of these new particles, you would say, well, it is of the order of 100 GV, if I want to explain something which is of order 100 GV. Unfortunately, LEP, in particular LEP2, has destroyed this kind of expectation, maybe naive expectation, that most of us had. So now we are pushed, as I showed you before, to the TV scale, which means that we have already one order of magnitude, some kind of little hierarchy to cope with. So some degree of fine-tuning, for instance, in the case of supersymmetry, already before this LHC result, we had to perform a percent fine-tuning on the supersymmetric parameters to avoid a direct conflict with the, in particular, with the LEP results. So this has to be taken into account, and it is enhanced by this result pushing up the masses of the SUSY particles. Okay, so concluding this question, you know, out of the four reasons I told you, which are observational reasons to go beyond the standard model, it is difficult to say if there is some new physics at the TV scale, in the sense that unfortunately none of these reasons, observational reason to go beyond the standard model, is necessarily asking for the presence of TV new physics. So our request that there is TV new physics is rather due to a theoretical reasons related to this stabilization of electroweak breaking scale. Could there be a bridge between these two, this theoretical request and this kind of observational evidence for new physics beyond the standard model? In my view, the best possibility is represented by dark matter, to have this kind of link between TV new physics and observational, say, new physics. This goes under the usual name of WIMP miracle. If you want, practically most, say, of the standard model extensions which have been proposed to solve the gauge hierarchy problem entail the presence of some new particle which is stable and which can play the role of a good candidate of dark matter in the form of a WIMP particle. Again, you know, this WIMP miracle has to be, in some sense, contrasted with the fact that, for instance, if you consider here the SUSY SUSY parameter space, in terms of the usual scalar and Gugino masses, if I were asking some of you to close your eyes, come here with a pencil, and put the pencil, put some points with your pencil, I could immediately bet that all the points you put are excluded from the point of view of dark matter. Because you see, the points which pass this kind of test are very few. They are in these little green-blue bands here. So this means again that we have
to put the scale on the axis. The yellow corresponds to what?
Yeah, these are by now, you know, essentially all these other regions are excluded, and you should look only at these points here. The stars are just representative points.
The other points should be still allowed, right?
Yes, yes. No, but also other points here. But these other points, you know, require very special relations among SUSY parameters. So you should have, for instance, some degeneracy, say, between masses of different SUSY particles to allow this. So for that reason, they are just tiny bands, you know, not large regions of this parameter. Okay, let me skip the situation concerning the searches. Let me tell you that an exercise we tried was to see if this kind of tuning, which is implied also by WIMP, say, physics, could be overcome if we consider that the standard model of particle physics is not the only standard model in the game. There is also another standard model in the game, which is the standard model of cosmology. So, could we conceive that, after all, the standard model of cosmology itself could undergo some modification, and so one could conceive non-standard cosmology. Many people have worked on possibilities, for instance, of non-standard cosmologies if you have extra dimensions. In our case, we worked on the case where, in addition to the tensorial component of gravity, say the G mu nu component, you have some scalar component, if you want a situation alla Brans-Dicke, say for gravity, but with a dynamical degree of freedom, this scalar component. And indeed, in this case, this parameter space opens very much, because then regions, for instance, which here are excluded, can become acceptable in this kind of non-standard cosmologies. Obviously, the price to pay is that you have additional parameters related to this non-standard cosmology. Let me, how are we with time? Three. So let me briefly just comment and then I conclude on the possibility to explore this TV scale using flavor. Well, you know, but flavor in principle is a very promising tool to explore the TV scale, there is no doubt. There is no doubt, simply, you know, consider any kind of rare process. Here, I don't know, there is some flavor change, neutral current process through some meson anti-meson oscillation. This is the standard model contribution. Add the contribution due to some new physics. So this C mu is the coefficient of this new physics. multiplying, say, something which must be proportional to the inverse of a scale where this new physics is. You see, the standard model contribution has this mw square as a representative of the scale, the 100 GeV scale of the standard model. The new physics will have some new scale lambda. So we expect this new contribution to scale with a lambda square, one over lambda square behavior. Well, then, you see, if you consider that a situation where this C nu is of the order of a standard model, of this CSM parameter, which is of order one, because the coefficient, the angles are already taken a factor out, say, of this CSM. Well, you see immediately that there is an enormous conflict. This scale, according to which process you consider, but should be at least 10 to 4, 10 to 4 TV. On the contrary, we know that the scale of this new physics to cope with the gauge hierarchy problem has to be 1 TV. So if you want to quantify this better, you see that this scale of the new physics, for instance, from Keon physics, has to be between 10 to 3, 10 to 4 GV, sorry, TV, if you do not consider CP violation, or even larger, at the level of 10 to 5 TV, if you consider CP violation. And the same occurs for B physics or charm physics. Always the scale has to be, say, 3-4 orders of magnitude larger than the scale that you should invoke for the gauge hierarchy problem. So there is a tension, I hope it is clear, there is a tension between the scale which is required by phenomenology if the new physics has something to do with this flavor violation, and the scale that this new physics should have in order to solve the gauge hierarchy problem. This can be translated, you see, in terms of the value of this coefficient, this C new physics coefficient, and you see that you are going to small numbers. Small numbers, which remind us of the small number of the Yukawa couplings of a standard model. So maybe these small numbers of the coefficients of flavor changing effects of the new physics could be related to the small numbers of the Yukawa coupling coefficients. Maybe this is suggesting that at the end we should have some theory which simultaneously takes into account the fermion masses and this suppression of the flavor change in neutral current phenomena. That's the reason why many people have worked on the possibility that there is some symmetry related to the presence of the different fermion generations. So the idea is that we could have the presence of low energy supersymmetry for the gauge hierarchy problem, and then some family symmetry for this structure in flavor. Well, now I skip the construction. In particular, we worked on the possibility of having some gauged SU3 family for SU3 family symmetry for this, but apart from the details, you know what I wanted to remark for phenomenological purpose is that the presence of a fermion family symmetry could change a lot our expectations for the rates of rare phenomena. For instance, commonly it is believed that mu into e gamma at the level of 10 to minus 12, which is the limit on its branch branching ratio is more powerful than a tau into mu gamma, whose branching ratio is limited at the level of 10 to minus 8 presently. Well, for instance, in our model, at the moment, on the contrary, this bound on tau into mu gamma is more efficient than the bound on a branching ratio mu into gamma, even if you take 10 to minus 12. The reason being that family symmetry can make preferable the transition between a third and second generation, for instance, than between a second and first generation.
So let me ask you this question on this tau to mu gamma. These limits, are they done in fully supersymmetric case, or this is just the double model?
No, these are done in a supersymmetric model, but where we impose in addition this family symmetry. So what is crucial here is the presence of this family symmetry, which favors, if you want, this specific construction. It is not a general thing, but in this specific construction, favors the transition between third and second generation. Okay, so it is true that in general mu into gamma is more powerful at the level we reached of sensitivity for the branching ratio. However, this was a warning that the presence of some specific symmetry can change this result.
These limits correspond to what then data values?
Yes, well, maybe for this I'll give you in a moment a more, let me give you here first the situation, the experiment, let me remind first of the experimental situation. So we have a dedicated experiment, as probably you know, which is called MEG, mu into e gamma, for the search of muon, or better, anti-muon into positron plus photon. As you know, in the standard model, this branching ratio is practically zero. I don't know, 10 to minus 54 maybe or so, because now neutrinos are massive, but practically zero. So if you find this decay, it is a clear, undisputable sign of new physics. We were very excited last year when at the IHCEP conference it was reported, this was the result of MEG last year, and after removing the background, they had this famous 5 points, 5 events here, which could be a signal for this flavor change in decay. Unfortunately, you see, this is the present situation reported at the EPS conference. So this was last year with the data of 2009. And this is this year, the MEG experiment analyzed the 2010 data, and you see that unfortunately this such a kind of signal is no longer there. Okay, this allowed to put a new bound. Now the new bound is at the level of 2 times 10 to minus 12. It is really an impressive result, because 2 times 10 to minus 12 is a bound which improves, say, roughly by one order of magnitude what we had previously. Moreover, the experiment is promising by the end of next year to reach the target, say, of 10 to minus 13. However, at the moment we have only bounds, no more say smoking gun evidence for some presence of new physics. It is interesting that in supersymmetry, if you take a generic CISO model, this is the usual CISO model where you have the usual lepton mass term, the Dirac mass term for neutrino, for neutrinos, and this is the Majorana mass term for the right-handed neutrino. So this is a traditional Cissot mechanism with a large capital M. Now, supersymmetrizing it means that all these become superfields now containing the supersymmetric partner of the ordinary particles. What is interesting is that in the running between the scale at which these soft breaking, between the soft breaking terms appear and the scale of the right-handed neutrino masses, in the running you have this effect contributing to the scalar lepton masses, so you have an effect which is proportional to the neutrino Yukawa couplings. This is very interesting because it is a general fact, it is not model dependent. Once you supersymmetrize a Cissot mechanism with a large capital M, you have indeed this effect in the running of the scalar lepton particles. This effect, you see, creates a mismatch between the scalar lepton mass matrix and the lepton mass matrix. The lepton mass matrix receives a contribution from this term, but the lepton mass matrix feels the presence of this additional source of flavor. So this creates a misalignment between the two mass matrices, which produces a non-diagonal effect in flavor-changing neutral currents. So this makes possible a decay of a kind of mu into a gamma through the exchange of these supersymmetric partners of the leptons. Okay, now let me skip the detail, let me give you the result. The result can be summarized here. So here you have the usual parameters M0, M1/2. Here they are taken to be of the same order. So I consider M1/2. The scale here is in GV. Here you have 100 GV. Here you have 1.6 TV. So you see it is a very large scale. This is M1/2. Well, the green points here represent our prediction in a generic, I repeat, Cissot model, where you have one of these neutrino couplings here, which is of the same order as the up quark Yukawa couplings. So imagine, for instance, some model where you have a quark lepton symmetry, this is called a Patti-Salam symmetry relating quark to leptons, so that up quarks are together with the neutrino. The neutrino, if you want, is the fourth color of the up sector, and the electron is the fourth color of the down sector. Well, if you have such a situation, then you see some of these couplings here must be very large, of the order of the top Yukawa coupling. The phenomenon is proportional to the square of this coupling, so clearly you can get a large effect. Now, coming back to this green area here, this represents the area where you take the angles diagonalizing the neutrino Yukawa couplings to be very large, of the same order as of the angles of the matrix which diagonalize the neutrino mass matrix. This is called the PMNS. Well, it is remarkable that no matter whether you take a small tangent beta, this is tangent beta 10, or even better if you take a larger tangent beta, this is 40, well, you see that the branching ratio of mu into e gamma, the line here was drawn before these mega results, it was at the level of 10 to minus 11, but now we are at the level of 10 to minus 12. Well, you see that 10 to minus 12 already fully excludes this, you should take here 10 to minus 12, fully excludes this green region. So we can say that already the present bound, 10 to minus 12, excludes that you can have a seesaw mechanism which is supersymmetrized with the presence of large angles in the diagonalization of the neutrino Yukawa cup in the same order of the PMNS. The red points here represent the most pessimistic situation where you take these angles instead of being of the order of a PMNS angle to be of the order of a CKM angles. Well, you see that even in the most pessimistic case, the red case, a bound at the level of 10 to minus 13 from the MEG experiment could start entering this region. The black points here represent a kind of intermediate situation between optimism and pessimism, where you have angles which are large apart from one angle, which is the angle so-called theta 1-3 angle, which here is taken to be zero. Let me stress that in the future we expect even more stringent results for this exploration of the parameter space if we'll have the mu e conversion nuclei experiments. There are two experiments which are planned, one at Fermilab in the Project X, and the other in Japan at the JPARC. And they plan to achieve an incredible really precision of the order of 10 to minus sensitivity of the order of 10 to minus 17, which would say overcome the kind of sensitivity of the MEG experiment for a new into e gamma. Okay, time I think to conclude. In case I leave you these slides if someone wants to go through them. Okay, now let me try to summarize the situation with three questions and three answers. So in the first part I commented about this question. Are we sure that there is a new physics at the TV scale? I repeat that in my view at least, if you bearing this kind of possibility that this gauge hierarchy problem is entirely a kind of human problem that we created ourselves, but it is not a problem of nature, namely that there is nothing to explain about it, and it is simply our approach which is not the right approach, and one should take a view which goes more in the direction of a kind of anthropic view for what concerns the parameters related to the electroweak breaking. Bearing such a possibility, there is no doubt that some new physics has to be present at the TV scale. Now, if there is such a physics at the TV scale, could it be that we don't see anything of it at the LHC? I think that it is very unlikely, unless one constructs very ad hoc models. In general, all these extensions have some signatures visible at the LHC. The third question is a bit more tricky question, namely, one can say, but if you are so sure that at the LHC we we see some signatures of new physics, is it worthwhile then spending time, energy, money, manpower into the other two alternative routes to access new physics, namely the flavor, the high intensity road and the astroparticle road? If you can produce and see these new particles at the LHC, you should be happy with that, and in case go to the other two roads only after you saw some evidence at the LHC. Well, in my view, this would be a profoundly wrong attitude, in the sense that no matter what the LHC can do, I think that it will have a really very hard time to reconstruct the fundamental theory which is behind the signatures which can appear. Imagine that morning someone comes here at the institutes bringing in his hand a squark or a gluino, you know, saying during the night I saw this. Immediately you jump over this person asking, yes, but this derives then from supergravity, from a gauge mediation, from a Gugino mediation model, which kind of or spectrum do you expect, blah blah, etc. etc. All these questions, I think that the LHC will not be able to answer. So if you want to have an insight into the fundamental theory, I think you need the complementarity of these two other roads. You know, complementarity is a kind of politically correct word that is often used to make everyone happy, but here it is used because I think we really need these two other roads. And finally, let me say frankly that, you know, if this new physics is low energy, but not as low energy as we expected in the past, it could be that for the LHC might be somewhat difficult. For instance, if squarks and gluinos are heavier than 2.5 or 3 TeV, it could be very, very hard to get some signatures at the LHC. On the contrary, the new physics decouples much, much more slowly if you go to flavor physics or dark matter. In flavor physics, for instance, if you are even at the 10% away from a minimal flavor violation situation, you can still test the presence of new particles, for instance squark particles, up to tens of TeV, so something much, much above what the LHC can do directly. And the same for dark matter searches. So the other two roads have more power of exploration, although obviously the direct searches remain always crucial. So, in conclusion, I think that this decade should provide us, through this complementarity, a good tool and good hope to have signals of new physics at the TV scale. And I hope that already by the end of next year, with maybe 10 inverse femtobands at the LHC, we'll have some concrete results substantiating some of the statements which are made in this slide. Okay, thank you. Sorry if I am a bit late.
I always thought that even if the Higgs mass was fixed by God, that still LHC will find new physics simply because we crossed unitarity bands otherwise. Is that not true?
No. No, in itself, the unitarity is we know that there must be something there at the electroweak scale to enforce this unitarity. If there is nothing, you are right that unitarity could not be said. But if you have a light Higgs, say for instance, there is no problem with unitarity. Now, the question is how come that there is a light Higgs? So, this is another issue. So, now for that reason, I said that the standard model in itself does not have any, how could I say, fundamental problem to theoretical fundamental problem that he is not able to answer. In the sense that, for instance, this gauge hierarchy problem, I was describing it as an aesthetical problem because, you know, if you allow for a fine tuning and you say, I don't care about fine tunings because numbers are fixed, numbers of these parameters are fixed, and I don't need any explanation for them, then I think the standard model can easily survive any kind of theoretical test that you can make.
Speaking of in all those M0 versus M1 half plots, if you impose left X bound for a large region,
yes, but this is, for instance, in the points that we consider that this is taken into account. It is taken into account. Yes, we put this this 100.
Parameter,
time data,
right,
for 115 GV we put. Yes, it depends on time data, which region, but...
It also depends on the mixing the 8 parameters.
Okay.
So in the maximum mixing case, then it's weak.
No, you know, the situation is more, since you have the possibility to play a little bit. In our case, what we did was to vary simultaneously, say, so out of these four parameters, A and A tangent beta, M0, M1 half, you know, and see which points are. It's true that there are combinations, obviously, which are excluded, for instance, if you go to small tangent beta, but you can still find the points.
Questions? Okay, let's thank Antonio again.